The briefing is brought to you in association with the Sustainable Cities in Action Forum at Expo City Dubai. The Sustainable Cities in Action Forum at Expo City Dubai is a place for city leaders, developers, architects and designers to come together and innovate for the future of urban spaces. It's an opportunity for the Global South to convene in the Global South. It's a testbed for real-world solutions that will shape the future of people and planet. You can hear from the innovative thinkers and inspirational voices that drove the narrative at this year's edition by listening to Monocle's special episodes of The Briefing, recorded live at Expo City Dubai in March. Find and listen to the shows now at monocle.com or wherever you get your podcasts. The Sustainable Cities in Action Forum 2024. Collaborate, innovate, transform.
You're listening to The Briefing, first broadcast on the 21st of October 2021 on Monocle 24. The Briefing is brought to you in association with Novartis. Hello and welcome to The Briefing, coming to you live from Studio One here at Midori House in London. I'm Daniel Bage. Coming up on today's program, the World Health Organization is urging wealthier nations to help end the COVID pandemic.
Our only way out is to support countries in the equitable distribution of PPE, tests, treatments, and vaccines. It's not rocket science, nor charity. It's smart public health and in everyone's best interest.
Our health and science correspondent, Dr. Chris Smith, will assess whether greater equity is all that's needed to bring an end to the health crisis. Also ahead, Donald Trump has announced plans to launch a new social media network. But will anyone be interested in signing up? Plus, Monocle's Lucinda Elliott brings us news from Latin America. And then Fernando Augusto Pacheco is here with the Global Countdown. Faye.
Hello, darling Daniel. Today we're headed to a land of excellent pop music.
Ooh, can't wait. That's all coming up right here on The Briefing with me, Daniel Bage. The World Health Organization says the COVID pandemic will, quote, go on for a year longer than it needs to because poor countries are not getting the vaccines they need. The WHO added that the ongoing COVID crisis could easily drag on deep into 2022 as a consequence. Let's hear what Dr. Bruce Aylward from the WHO had to say about the unequal distribution of vaccines last month.
It's absolutely unfair, inappropriate, and it's in nobody's interest. The manufacturers may make the vaccines, but then they have contracts with high-income countries and producing countries, which restrict their ability to be able to serve other contracts like COVAX and AVAX. So a lot of our conversations was around understanding those restrictions so that then we could try and use other means and levers and discussions to try and open those up.
That is Dr. Bruce Aylward, who is Senior Advisor to the Director General at the World Health Organization, speaking last month. Well, let's unpack this further now with Monocle's health and science correspondent, Dr. Chris Smith, also a consultant virologist at Cambridge University. Good afternoon, Chris.
Daniel.
You hear from Dr. Bruce Aylward there about what they've tried to do with the vaccine manufacturers, many of which are now saying they've done what they can to help poor nations. So just unpack how big an issue this is and what's being said about what we can do to help.
Well, if you cast your mind back to 2020, 18 months ago, as the pandemic was beginning to unfurl, the Gates Foundation, one of the big funders behind the initiatives to try to vaccinate the world, saw Melinda Gates speaking on behalf of the foundation using the very prescient piece of language, if there's COVID anywhere, there's COVID everywhere. And the point she's getting at is, if you swept your yard clear of dirt into the street, then unless you sweep the street clean as well, then the next gust of wind brings all that dirt flying back. So it's not over anywhere till it's over everywhere. And we all agree that really the only way to do that is to try to protect everyone everywhere. And our best prospect for doing that, because we agree also that we can't eradicate this virus, we can't even eliminate the virus, which is why, and they are subtly different things, which is why people have gone away from thinking about zero COVID to living alongside COVID. But part and parcel of being able to live alongside COVID is protecting the most vulnerable. And that really means it comes down to vaccines. And the situation in which we find ourselves now, the difficulty that politicians grapple with is that the people who elect them will, of course, say, well, I've paid taxes. I'm electing you to look after and safeguard me as an individual. And other countries are saying, well, you know, we've got individuals that need safeguarding too, and we can't afford these vaccines. And you agree that you're not better off till we're better off, so you should give your vaccines to us. And then you get the moral argument, well, if we don't give vaccines as boosters, for instance, to people in first world countries, we save a life in one country at the cost of a life in another country. And actually, you don't net achieve anything apart from to not get elected as a government, which is why those governments are sort of sitting on their hands. And we've got very, very big language being used. People are pledging billions of doses around the world. You know, 508 million doses pledged to COVAX, the initiative to try to solve this. At the same time, only a fraction of those doses have actually turned up so far. And so the World Health Organization is trying to break the logjam, saying, come on, we've got to be doing our bit for everybody. But at the same time, I'm not sure that their argument sort of holds up either, because we're vaccinating people like it's going out of fashion in countries like the UK, mm-hmm. where we're simultaneously seeing our health secretary stand up on national television and say, and we're expecting 100,000 cases by the end of the month per day.
And obviously, there are other Western nations, richer countries, that are moving ahead with the booster campaigns. How does this mesh with getting vaccines to poor nations? Is it a matter of just slowing down the vaccinations in Western countries and passing those doses on, or ramping up production? How does that actually work?
Well, actually, I spoke recently to Richard Hatchett, who is part of CEPI, which is the Coalition on Epidemic on Pandemic Innovation. And he was making the point, actually, alongside Sarah Gilbert, who was one of the architects of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, that, in fact, we don't have a supply problem with vaccines. We've got enormous supplies of vaccines now. Actually, it's a distribution problem, and it's an on-the-ground distribution and implementation problem. Not all vaccines are suitable. Not all horses are good for all courses. We can't just deploy Pfizer's vaccine, for example, into a resource-poor third-world country that doesn't have a fridge and doesn't have an electricity supply and has a remote populace that you are going to struggle to access. We need decent vaccines that are really resilient and robust at working on the ground. So it's, and we have got those, they're coming, but it's a question of getting them to the right place at the right time. So it's really a logistics exercise as well as a vaccine supply exercise. So it's not just as simple as saying, right, dish out vaccines and give them to other countries. It doesn't sort of stack up that way.
Well, you mentioned the comments of the health secretary here in the UK yesterday, talking about how things could go in the winter and urging more people to get vaccinated. But I'm just thinking about other poorer countries that have very low vaccination rates. How does the virus continue to mutate, to grow, and to cause problems for everyone in the world if we don't take care of sharing vaccines more widely?
Well, the current stats are that about half the world population has now been vaccinated, which sounds outstanding, doesn't it? And you think, gosh, what an achievement in 10 months since the first woman, a British woman, received the first dose into the general public of a vaccine. Here we are with billions of doses administered. And then you say, well, actually, where are those 50%? Well, they're not in resource-poor settings. They're not in these poorer countries where less than 5% of the population of Africa's 50-plus countries have been vaccinated. About 1%, or in some cases 0.1% of many poorer countries' populations have been vaccinated. So what that means is there is the potential for disease to run amok in those countries. Where disease runs amok, there is a higher prospect for getting variants to emerge. And obviously, we're also worried about that in the UK. We've seen in the last few days comments passed about this spin-off or offshoot of the Delta variant that's currently accounting for the majority of the cases in the UK. This is AY4.2. People are currently trying to get the measure of whether this variant, which is across the world actually, but whether it's even more transmissible than the Delta variant. So that's the big worry, is if we have uncontrolled growth and spread of the virus, it's affording the virus an opportunity to further optimize itself to us as a host. and do it in the face of a partially vaccinated population. If you've got smatterings of people who are vaccinated, as you increase the amount of vaccine, but if you do it slowly, the virus increasingly encounters vaccinated and partially immune people. And that gives it a look-see at what it could be doing to bypass that protection. So really the most effective way, and this is sort of what the WHO are saying as well, the most effective way to bring the pandemic to a close as fast as possible is to minimise the prospect of that happening. And you do that by really going in hard, strong and fast with all the vaccine power that you can to really bear down on the virus and minimise the chance of that happening.
Chris, thank you for this update. That is our health and science correspondent, Dr. Chris Smith. Now, here is Monocle's Emma Searle with the day's other news headlines.
Thanks, Daniel. European Union leaders are meeting to discuss whether to sanction Poland over a controversial legal ruling. It follows a decision by a Warsaw court to question the supremacy of European law. Some members of the bloc want to withhold Poland's access to emergency funds until the issue is resolved. A new poll suggests Japan's Liberal Democratic Party looks set to lose some seats in this month's national election, but that it should stay in power thanks to a parliamentary pact with a smaller party. However, Prime Minister Fumio Kishida says he still hopes to win a mandate to press ahead with reforms. South Korea has launched its first homegrown rocket in a bid to join the space race. The rocket launch, which took off from a site 500 kilometers south of the capital Seoul, makes South Korea just the seventh country to successfully send a satellite into space. And the BBC has become the latest British institution to update its logo in an effort to consolidate its brand. Slick new emblems appeared yesterday across its TV channels, on-demand iPlayer service, and audio app BBC Sounds. You can find out more about the rebrand by heading to monocle.com/minute. Those are the day's headlines. Back to you, Daniel.
Thanks very much, Emma. We turn our attention now to the United States, where former U.S. President Donald Trump has announced plans to launch a new social media network. It's called Truth Social. And Trump says the platform would, quote, stand up to the tyranny of big tech. The former commander-in-chief was, of course, banned from Twitter and suspended from Facebook earlier this year after his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol. Well, let's get the latest now from former U.S. diplomat Louis Lukens, also now a senior partner at the political consultancy Signum Global. Lou, I want to come on to the bigger play here for Trump, but first let's talk about what he's actually launching. What is this platform?
Well, it, you know, as you noted, it seems to be a rival, or is intended to be a rival, to Facebook and Twitter, which have both banned him. It'll be they're rolling this out in sort of a trial phase in the coming months, and then it'll be open to the broader public early next year. And there are several components to it, right? There's sort of the social media. It looks a lot like Twitter, I have to say. The mock-up of it looks very similar to Twitter. But they're also going to have a, you know, pay for video service and other services, which are all aimed at what he calls this, you know, liberal media consortium, which he feels has been blocking him.
Twitter was, of course, Donald Trump's favorite way to communicate, favorite way to govern, we can even say. It's interesting he hits out at big tech, but also really needs that platform to continue speaking to his base, I guess we can say.
He does. I mean, you know, the notion that this platform will rival Facebook and Twitter, I think, is very, you know, hopeful for him. But I think it's a stretch, right? I think he will have a dedicated, his dedicated base will probably sign up for this platform. But I don't see it having much reach beyond that. Former President Trump is interested in running again, and he hints at this. And he needs a way to reach his base quickly and easily, and he doesn't have that right now. And I think this will be his way to do that.
Is this a sign then he definitely will run? Is this the start of the next campaign for Trump?
I think it's too early to say he definitely will run. He's definitely thinking about it, and I think this is a step in that direction. I wouldn't say that the launch of this platform means that he definitely will run, but he seems to be clearing the field out of competitors, right? I mean, he dominates the Republican Party right now. He is indisputably the leader of the Republican Party as it is now, you know, constructed, and will remain so as long as he intends to be. And I think he likes to be in that position of power over the party.
We, of course, in the middle of investigations into the Capitol riot back in January, when many were caught off guard at the events there, but it was plain to see, I guess, for many, if you looked in the right corners of the internet, how concerned are security agencies and how closely will people be paying attention to this new platform?
Well, I think people will definitely be watching it. And, you know, it's interesting that the company that's creating this platform with Trump is going public. And so it will be subject to U.S. regulations, whether it's the, you know, the FEC or FCC. And so, you know, the notion that this will be just the Wild West of social media and Trump can do whatever he likes is actually not true. He's setting up a platform that will be subject to government regulation. So he will have to be careful. They'll have to watch carefully what kind of content is on there and how far it pushes the boundaries of what's allowable.
Who's going to sign up to this platform?
Well, I think the 30% or so of American voters who love Donald Trump, who think that the election was stolen from him, who think that he should be the president and sitting in the White House right now, that core group of his base, I think, will sign up for this. But whether it has appeal to crossover voters or independent, I think it's too early to tell.
You know, throughout Donald Trump's presidency and now, it's interesting to see the shift on how he went from calling up Fox News whenever he wanted to talk to just tweeting about it. So this is clearly a vital platform for him or way to communicate, we can say.
Well, Fox News has stepped back from Trump a little bit. And so he relies on some of his other networks in OAN and Newsmax, but they have a much smaller distribution network than Fox News had, and a much smaller viewership. So he does, I mean, if he really wants to have his message out there, you know, this can be a double-edged sword for him too. I mean, he put a statement out on his webpage commenting on General Colin Powell's death a couple of days ago, which, you know, shocked most Americans when they read it, I think. So he, you know, he's going to have greater access to the American public directly, I think, through this social media site. But he has to be a little careful what he puts out there because, again, his base loves him no matter what. But the independents and the swing voters are the ones that he will need if he runs again. And those are the ones that he has to be careful not to alienate.
Just lastly, Lou, and briefly, how important is the investigations into the Capitol riots we've mentioned, and how will that hurt Donald Trump possibly going forward?
Well, I'm not sure it'll hurt Donald Trump going forward. I think most Americans have already made up their minds one way or the other on the Capitol riots. And, you know, the Republicans are working very hard to try to paint the investigation and the committee hearings as a purely partisan exercise. It helps the Democrats a bit that they have two Republicans on the committee. But, you know, the Republicans are basically, they're not playing along with this. And they're you know, fighting against the investigations and pushing back on it. And I think most Americans, as I said, either believe that what happened on January 6th was a threat to democracy, or they think, you know, the Trump supporters think it was a peaceful demonstration of free speech.
Lou, always nice to talk to you. Thank you for this. That was the former U.S. diplomat, Louis Lukens. You are listening to The Briefing on Monocle 24.
Novartis is proud to partner The Briefing on Monocle 24. Novartis is a company that is committed to reimagining medicine. A global healthcare leader intent on changing the practice of medicine, Novartis has been exploring uncharted frontiers in science for more than a century. Today, we are hearing from Aya Khalil, global head of the AI Innovation Center at Novartis. Aya, you've spoken before about the potential of AI in this space, but what are some of the key hurdles in your path?
A major hurdle is around just being able to access the data and having the data be fluid and being able to have the data be at the fingertips for those who are going to want to leverage it to get insights using AI and machine learning. Another major hurdle is how do we, once we have these models and algorithms, actually change our way of working, our mindset to being able to leverage these tools, these data-driven tools in our workflows and actually change how we fundamentally do discovery science and develop our medicines.
Aya Khalil, Global Head of the AI Innovation Center at Novartis. An enduring commitment for more than a quarter of a century. Novartis, reimagining medicine.
You're back with The Briefing on Monocle 24. I'm Daniel Bache. We're off to Latin America now for a roundup of stories that have been making news there. And Monocle's correspondent in the region, Lucinda Elia, joins us on the line from Montevideo. Good morning to you, Lucinda.
Good morning, Daniel.
Let's start by looking at a nationwide state of emergency that has come into force in Ecuador. What can you tell us there?
So this new measure was announced at the start of the week in response to a wave of violent crime. Listeners may remember a gruesome prison riot in the city of Guayaquil a few weeks back, where over 100 inmates were killed. And Ecuador, like several other Latin American countries, is really suffering from high rates of poverty due to the pandemic and increasing levels of drug-related crime, particularly in places where cocaine is smuggled. So official figures suggest that the number of murders in the first 8 months of this year in Ecuador are double those in the same period last year. Ecuador is an important transit country for drugs that are trafficked from neighboring Peru and Colombia up north to Mexico and beyond. And so under these emergency measures, the army and the police can carry out inspections, drug searches in the hope of regaining some level of control. It's also worth mentioning that the new president, who was only voted in earlier this year, has made cracking down on crime a key policy.
Let's move on to look at the situation in Haiti now. Gang violence, obviously a major issue. A group there claiming responsibility for the kidnap of American missionaries earlier this week. What is the latest there? The capital, obviously, a huge problem, but as much as 50% of it, I'm reading now, is controlled by these armed militias.
Yeah, so among those who have actually been held by this specific gang are five children and seven women who worked for a charity called Christian Aid Ministries, which is based in the state of Ohio, which actually ensures that Haitian children have access to things like proper food, shelter and clothing. And the missionaries were returning from a visit to an orphanage when the bus that they were traveling in was seized on a main road east of the capital. The gang is actually demanding $1 million per person. But again, the kidnappings, the ransoms just show how the levels of serious violent crime are on the rise, but just also how desperate people have become in Haiti in the wake of the pandemic, you know, and severe weather, political upheaval, and how local gangs dominate. I'm told that there are over 160 different gangs in Haiti, and 20,000 people so far are said to have fled their homes due to gang-related violence this year.
And what's the latest from the leadership there? There were reports earlier this week as well that there is consideration of bringing in armed groups from abroad to help control, especially the capital.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the levels of violence that we're seeing and have obviously been called to arms in sense of from the wide region, that some level of control and help and assistance to the government, which has already experienced huge political upheaval with the assassination of the president, needs to be brought in. And I think the news this week with the case of Christian Aid Ministries is just a further catalyst that some international help is needed.
Let's move on to talk about football, obviously important in the continent where you are now. A major scandal brewing around Diego Maradona, still this man creating controversy in both Uruguay, where you are, and Argentina. What can you tell us?
So this is yet another layer, as you say, of complexity that's been added to the Diego Maradona case. Not only are there questions around how he died this time last year and battles over his inheritance, but now a video is circulating of him in bed with a teenage girl that's emerged as part of a human trafficking case against one of his associates. And a woman, Mavis Alvarez, claims that the Argentine footballer and his entourage groomed her as a teenager, that they flew her to Argentina from her native Cuba without her parents' permission back in 2000 when she was just 16 and he was 40. And she's claiming that he plied her with drugs, locked her in a hotel, even made her get plastic surgery. And what's been so curious, I suppose, about these revelations is how younger generations in Argentina and here in Uruguay are reacting to this, particularly in the Me Too era and an era where, you know, serious questions are being raised around machismo, domestic violence, how footballers and certain politicians who were once totally untouchable possibly no longer are. So some serious questions really about how this will affect his legacy potentially, you know, and if Diego had died maybe a decade ago, it would have been easier to dismiss these allegations in the wake of his death. But no, I foresee this becoming possibly a bigger catalyst for an investigation.
Just lastly, Lucinda, and briefly, cruises returning to the Antarctic. What can you tell us there?
So you can voyage to the Antarctic as of November 19th. This is as travel restrictions lift. Atlas Ocean Voyages is planning 15 different trips from Ushuaia in Argentina during the Southern Hemisphere summer. And this does really reflect COVID cases that are some of the lowest that they've been at any point this year. There are roughly 1,000 cases a day in Argentina versus, what is it, 40,000 in the UK. You know, although the British population is slightly bigger, around 60 million compared to 45 million, it's a huge difference. So all aboard if you feel like traveling to chillier climes.
Lucinda, thank you so much for this. That is Monocle's Latin America Affairs correspondent, Lucinda Elliott. You are listening to The Briefing on Monocle 24. And finally, on today's program, it being Thursday, it's time for Monocle's pop fanatic to join me in studio, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. It is time for the Global Countdown. Faye, you gave us a hint at the top there, but where are we going this week?
I was trying my best with my kind of cut-glass British accent. So we're heading to the United Kingdom, actually. It's funny because I don't go to the United Kingdom that often, but I think this week's a very special top five.
You live in the UK, but you mean you don't break down the pop charts very
exactly,
often.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. I like to look abroad, but you know, the UK is a fascinating music market. I mean, we all know, I mean, amazing artists. I mean, for its size, I think it's kind of, you know, it's amazing the influence of British musicians. Oh, it's still on the charts. Just look at Adele. Spoiler alert, she's not yet on the charts because her song is too new, but perhaps in the future she will be here. But shall we start?
Yeah, number let's five? Start.
And you know what, Daniel? There's a trend in the charts. I'm noticing perhaps in the 90s we had a little bit of that, the sleeper hit. So songs that have been released, you know, 1 or 2 years ago, and suddenly they resurface and they're still in the charts. And number five is a typical case of that. It's an indie band actually called Glass Animals. Yeah. Do you know that?
Yeah.
And you know, they were mildly successful, but with this song, they were number one in Australia. This song is doing very well in Europe as well. And I think we should say thanks to TikTok as well. I know, but TikTok is extremely influential these days on the music scene. The song is quite cool. It's about loss and longing. We're going to hear it now. Number five, Glass Animals with Heat Wave. I think about is you, late nights in the middle of June. Heat wave's been faking me out.
They're classified as a rock band, but I can understand why this song is so popular because it's very catchy and it just gets in your head. I like it.
Exactly. I think the more you listen to it, I have to admit, the first time I did, I was like, okay, this is nothing special to it. But yeah, I think perhaps it's the kind of song you need to hear a few times as well. And it's good to see a band in the top five. It's interesting. I think we discussed a few months ago about the demise of bands in a way. Yeah. There's still some of them. We shouldn't worry too much about that. Shall we do some controversy here on the show?
Yeah, I'm not going to embarrass myself by saying I don't know how to pronounce the name of this artist, but let's I like controversy, so talk to me.
Yeah, it's Jessie Nelson. She was a former member of Little Mix. This is the first single from her solo career, and she invited Nicki Minaj. The thing is, there's been a lot of accusations that Jessie Nelson, she was accused of blackfishing, appropriating of black culture. Not only that, I think the song is fairly generic in a way. It's another song talking about bad boys. So it's a bit of a clunky start, because of course Little Mix, incredibly successful British girl group. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it's here number four, but apparently I don't think it's going to stay in the top 10 for too long.
Okay.
But let's hear the song and you tell me what you think. This is Jessie Nelson and Nicki Minaj with Boys. I don't know what it is. I like a bad, bad boy. You know I like a bad, bad boy. I like a bad boy. You can't stop me. I love bad. I
don't even know what you call that. Obviously, it's got the P. Diddy track, there. Is it a remix? Is it a remake? What is that?
It's kind of a homage, and he's in the video as well. He does a special cameo. I mean, I do like a song about bad boys, but I just think it's quite a generic one. I wonder what Jess is going next. Too much controversy here at number four.
Well, let's swiftly move on to number three then.
Which is a fascinating story. And talking again about sleeper hits, that's a song that has been released in 2019. And I think it's going to be one of the successes of the year that we're going to be talking when we do our year-end review. He's from Nigeria. He's a musician, CK. And, you know, it's amazing how Nigerian pop, Afropop as well, it's finally doing very well around the world. It's the most Shazam track at the moment as well. And it's a hit not only in the UK, it's in Brazil, in the United States, it's everywhere. This is what I can say is a global hit. And I have to say, I love this track. Shall we have a listen? CK with Love 1TT.
Is this another chart position we can attribute to TikTok?
As well. I think it's one factor. And I think the song is good as well. You know, I think this is a typical case where, you know, that's why people are listening everywhere. But it's funny, from 2019, an artist from Nigeria, and suddenly he's everywhere. I love that.
Nice song.
And number two, I have to say, this guy is not TikTok. I mean, he's literally everywhere.
He's not TikTok, but he is everywhere. You're right.
I mean, can you believe that Ed Sheeran has been on the top of the UK charts for 15 weeks in a row?
Wow.
With this song and his the previous single, Bad Habits. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, and I have to say, Dan, I used to make fun of Ed Sheeran, whatever, maybe a bit boring, but he knows how to craft a good pop song. There's always amazing beats, and he seems like a decent, nice guy as well. Do you have any opinions on Ed Sheeran?
He's just everywhere. There's like this British fascination with Ed Sheeran, and he's pictured with Lionel Messi, he's with Beckham at big football matches, he's just everywhere.
He's everywhere. He's like a biscuit everywhere. Anyway, let's have a listen number two, Ed Sheeran with Shivers. As a pop track, it's quite perfect. I mean, the beat is in the right place. You know, he knows what he's doing in a way.
Very catchy, and he's, I mean, moved on from just being the guy with the acoustic guitar. He's moved on his musical palette, we can say, his musical style. I like it.
I like it too. I mean, look, more electropop, which kind of I'm enjoying this new phase of Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
But number one, and I think that's the reason why I chose the UK as well, we have a British legendary musician. I mean, Elton John. I mean, what a remarkable career. Basically, Daniel, he's the first solo artist to have a top 10 hit in the UK for six decades. So since the 60s, I mean, that's impressive. And what I like about Elton John, that he always collaborates with young musicians, so he never stops. He always wants to kind of, discover new genres, new artists. I mean, in fact, you told me this, he's quite close friends with Ed Sheeran. They're going to release the Christmas songs together this year.
Oh, well, maybe we'll see them at the top of the charts together again. I think it was Ed Sheeran that provided the boost that got Elton John to number one, but who knows.
But let's have a listen. I love this track. It's together, Elton John and Dua Lipa, remixed by Pnau, and it's Cold Heart, which is a medley of a couple of Elton John tracks. Let's have a listen. Cold heart, heart done by you. Something's looking better, baby.
Okay.
I could imagine you playing in a school disco, actually. It's quite suave disco. I quite like that. I mean, well done for Elton John. I mean, he's 74, same week as he had his hip replacement surgery as well. I mean, that's the reality of it. But he's doing well.
Rolling Stones are on tour again. Elton John's back at the top of the charts. I mean, I like to see it. It's great. And as you say, he's wonderful at collaborating with people. And his radio show is fantastic as well, where he invites young artists on. So all the power to Elton John. Love to see it.
Absolutely. Good top five. You know, well done, UK.
That is Monocle senior correspondent Fernando Augusto Pacheco, bringing us to the end of today's edition of The Briefing, produced by Rhys James and Emma Searle. We're back tomorrow at midday London time. I'm Daniel Bache. Thanks for listening.